Usually when lawmakers talk about giving a state agency hundreds of millions of dollars in additional funding, the goal is to make something happen, be it the construction of a high-profile building, the completion of a long-awaited highway, or, say, the introduction of some major education program. This year, in contrast, lawmakers seem ready to allocate an extra $572 million just to make sure something doesn't happen, namely the preventable death of an abused or neglected child. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and this is Indiana Lawmakers. The ongoing push to shore up Indiana's embattled Department of Child Services is front and center in this year's legislative session and on this week's show as we welcome four people with strong views about what should be done to ensure the well-being of the state's most vulnerable citizens. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researchers are advancing manufacturing industries by developing 3D additive methods, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
Indiana has been struggling for years to protect at-risk children, but that long-running challenge erupted into a full-blown crisis just over a year ago when the head of the Department of Child Services resigned, complaining that Governor Eric Holcomb's administration had effectively stripped her of her ability to run the agency. The administration, she said, was alienating foster parents, undercutting child placement agencies, and we're still imposing spending cuts that, quote, all but ensured children will die. What has been done since then, and what will be done over the next 3.5 months of the session to prevent such a tragedy? Joining me to discuss the issue are Republican Representative Greg Steuerwald of Avon, Democratic Representative Ryan Hatfield of Evansville, Republican Senator Andy Zay of Huntington, and Demetrius Hutchins, who spent much of her childhood, unhappily, in foster care and group homes before earning a series of college degrees, including a doctorate in education, and becoming a researcher at Indiana University. Our own success story, one of four success stories, we'll say. Thank you all for being here for what clearly is an issue that's on the front burner, so to speak, this session.
Absolutely.
Let's start with a little, we now have the benefit of hindsight. It's 2020, as they say. So a year ago, when Mary Beth Bonaventura, the director I mentioned, resigned in protest effectively and issued a fairly bleak assessment of where things were, in hindsight, how dire were things, were conditions at that point?
I think there were a number of issues that had to be dealt with, and I think the situation was not what we wanted, not what we obviously hoped for. So the governor did act immediately, impaneled a group of experts to help make some recommendations, and those issues were taken up in summer study committee this year.
And there were a number of bills, in fact, I think, 25 or 30 bills that were proposed last session in the wake of the resignation dealing with aspects of this. Let me get the other side of the other party's perspective here. Was it, again, as bad as the dire warnings we heard, or was it just more of an ongoing problem that we have struggled with for years?
Dire. And, it was disappointing that it was a surprise to the legislature, because I don't think that it was a surprise to those out in the communities around the state. As a deputy prosecutor, I worked with DCS caseworkers every single day. And I'll tell you, these folks could have told you. They knew that we were in dire straits. And so, that's what was, and hopefully will never be again. We've got a lot of work to do. This was a good first step, I think. But we were in a dire situation, and the families around the state suffered because of it. Our caseworkers suffered because of it. Their families suffered because of it. And it was no surprise to them. And so we were in a dire situation, I think. There is credit to be given on the response, but it's a long-term process, and we need to make sure that we continue to not fall asleep at the switch and be ready as things develop and as we figure out what's working and what's not working going forward.
Senators, I'll let you weigh in on how dire it was, but I'm going to add a second part, make it more complicated as we go
here. Sure.
How did we get, if you agree that it was bad, how did we get How did things get to the precarious or very dangerous situation that we were in a year ago?
Well, it's tough to analyze and say exactly what that one thing was. I think you can reflect on the fact that the opioid crisis, the drug crisis, certainly played a big role in that. I mean, we had parents, you know, that were more committed to chasing those drugs and getting those drugs than being a part of their families. And I think that precariously left our caseworkers in a very troubling situation. And you know, we had a balloon. We were to speak to the comment on direness, or if that's such a word, but
it is now.
We had increased our caseload, I think, to 80% within 4 years. That simply was unsustainable, and that was a number that really resonated with me, and just the fact that we're dealing with the most vulnerable Hoosiers here, really. And yeah. it was tough for me as a legislator coming in to walk by that and not pay attention to it. It needed all hands on deck, and that included the 150 members of the legislature down there working together with our agency and our governor to change the trajectory. Was what she said on the money? I don't know. I think it was certainly a shot over the bow that we all needed to respond to. And we've begun that response, but it'll be a marathon. It's not a sprint.
And not only was Indiana's situation bad in terms of its own historical measurements, in terms of 10 years prior, 20 years prior, but in terms of the states, the neighboring states, I mean, we were way out of, and maybe we can touch on why that might have been, because other states in the Midwest certainly had an opioid crisis as well.
And these situations are always challenges. I mean, you're dealing with the human condition, families. It's tough to decide at what point that intervention needs to happen.
Demetrius Hutchins, you have an interesting perspective, as I mentioned in the introduction. You lived in 14 different facilities or different homes before age 16. So do you think things had gotten a lot worse between the time you experienced it and what we were talking about this time last year? Or were people just not aware? Was the problem getting worse, or was it people just woke up and realized there was a problem?
I think the quick resignation just shone a light on a problem that had been existing for some time now. I think that helped basically give a voice to not only the caseworkers, but the vendors, the families themselves, to say to our lawmakers, hello, we need some help here and we need some reform here. So although it was a shock to a lot of people who weren't always in the mix when it came to what was going on with DCS, I think it opened up a window, more so a door, so to speak, for us to get in there, get some reform going, and make some lasting changes that will hopefully never have us going down that path again.
Do you think, given that I think there's consensus that there was a serious situation, had it not been for that resignation heard around the world, or at least around the state, would we have seen 25 or 30 bills introduced last year? Would we have seen a summer study committee? Was it front and center in terms of the public's consciousness?
I think nationally, the plight of foster children or foster youth is becoming something that people are putting their eyes on, which is great. It's great for all of our states. I think for us, it needed to be, I think this whole resignation is something that took the wool over our eyes. One thing that we tend to do is we tend to put the responsibility on state workers to handle these particular situations, and we kind of just leave them to their own regard and let them figure out some things. And when it gets dire, so to speak, is when lawmakers step in. I think it's important with the summer committee that established a continuous checks and balances moving forward, and I think having that will definitely help in the long run.
Well, there was the summer study committee, and Representative Sirwald, you mentioned that the governor acted fairly quickly after the resignation in terms of bringing in an Alabama-based outfit that knows its way around these sorts of things, has advised a number of states around the country, and that organization came out with 20 recommendations, I believe, in June. So the governor in the State of the State address a week or so back said, you know, we're making progress, and he gave several statistics. Mission accomplished?
Well, we've got a great start.
Hey, you're answering his question. No, that's right. He says no, but you can answer whatever you want.
Well, we have a great start. We just have a long way to go.
Well, what's better and what's, I mean, what Can you point to something that is specifically better because of the actions taken thus far and something that's still crying out for...
Certainly talk about the bill that came out of Zimmer's study in a bipartisan fashion.
Which happens to be a bill, then, that you introduced or authored and passed this past week on Tuesday, 100-0, which I don't think happens much on any piece of legislation these days as it moves over to the Senate.
Well, it happens more than some people think, but... No, it came out in a bipartisan fashion. Did not surprise me at all, because in the summer study we took a very proactive approach from a bipartisan stance. So we dealt with issues regarding caseloads. I stated at the beginning of the summer study session that our goal here was to make DCS give them the tools they need to be successful. And I think we did that. We've lowered the caseloads for the caseworkers.
And it would be below, correct me if I'm wrong, even the national recommendations.
Yes.
To a certain extent.
Right.
So you want to go even below.
Right.
And then you mentioned there's some other measures, too.
Well, we even added a category that was brand new in House Bill 1006 this year to be able to keep track of the number of people that the caseworker is dealing with. So that was very helpful. We needed to do that, and we did it. We also needed some of the data that will come back to us for making that additional category. I think that was done very well.
You let people also be in collaborative care situations at a later age, up till 21, opposed to 18.
That's exactly right. We took the age from 18 to 21. We had a very robust discussion in the summer study. In fact, that's the only topic we that was assigned to us, and we had four meetings. We took a great deal of testimony.
20 or 30 hours, I know you said.
Yes, 20 or 30 hours of testimony. The caseworkers have a very difficult job. They have to make some very tough decisions. So we wanted to give them some abilities to do that. The initial assessment time used to be 30 days, and there's testimony that that was not enough time to do a really good analysis.
So you're suggesting 45 days instead, right?
Yes, it's 45 days in
the
bill.
And 2 hours for people in dire situations or facing bodily injury.
That's right.
Instead of, it used to be an hour, now 2 hours.
Yes, right? It was an emergency situation.
So those are sort of that's the crux of it. So now it was unanimous, which means, by definition, if I'm doing my math right, Representative Hatfield, that you voted for it. But I know that it was with fingers crossed, or maybe with a caveat, because last week, of course, you had put forth a proposed amendment that you said would have put more teeth into some of the caseload provisions that Representative Steerwald just discussed. You giving up on that, or you figure that is still overall a worthwhile endeavor, even if it I don't want to put words in your mouth. Does it lack teeth it needs?
I think it does, and we can talk a little bit about that. I think that look, this is a good bill, and this is a good first step, and it gets us further down the road of where we need to be. We have been in a dire situation. I think the governor has responded in an appropriate way. I think he deserves credit for that. I think that, when you mention the state of the state, sometimes those of us in office need to be able to tell folks that we're doing something. I think that that's what he was trying to do in the state of the state. I think he did so appropriately. Mission accomplished is not something that is even within the realm of the conversation right now. We are not mission accomplished. We are fixing a problem and hoping to better ourselves going forward. I filed an amendment to Representative Steerwald's bill that I thought added much needed teeth. The truth of the matter is that when we did the review, and I thought it was a good review, and we went around the state and found out what was wrong, one of the primary problems around the state were that caseworkers were overworked, under-respected and appreciated and paid, and that there was no mechanism in place when caseworkers' caseloads overburdened them and went over the statutory amounts. That's an important thing to remember. We had statutory amounts in place before 1006.
And were, in fact, litigated, and the court said we can't really enforce them because there was lack of clarity,
and
correct?
And the court said that the legislature hasn't provided the needed teeth, and so I felt
like
it was an important point to make, and that
it would have been hiring if it had gone above the case prescribed case loads, there would have been a trigger that would have necessitated hiring or transfer of
employees. Look, one of the problems was that everybody was saying, we're not really sure whose job it is. We said it's the director's job to come to the legislature and ask for more workers.
I mean, Senator Zay, I mean, where do you fall on this? Do you think that saying, giving a specific number that's lower than the national average in terms of caseload and management responsibilities of caseworkers and their supervisors is sufficient, or does it lack teeth? Is this a paper tiger?
I hesitate to weigh in on that. I think they have spent a lot more time on the legislation already. To the point of mission accomplished, we are not there. As long as there is a child in Indiana that isn't going to have the same opportunity as my child, I think the here's what's and why's. We need to let the folks do their job, and we need to provide the framework to do that and the support within that structure. You know, what's that magic number? I don't know. Some actually are more capable, possibly, of handling more caseloads, and others aren't.
Which you would argue, I guess, and there's part of the flexibility that would be worthwhile to leave at the agency level?
So I'm a little concerned with the state being too heavy-handed as far as dictating down to that level exactly what that management should look like. You know, and that's, you know, that's kind of been my approach in this last year. We did hire a new director. There was a study done. I think there needed to be a cooling off period, if you will, and letting that person, letting Dr. Stigdon get a hold of her agency, letting that report come out, and to begin to see what her rollout and what her footprint on that was going to be. It came a little later than I like. I think her report or some of her action steps came out, was it November, I believe, and I was looking for it maybe in August. So it kind of put us up against the gun where there was, I think, quite a bit
of... So were some of your Democratic counterparts.
Right.
They were looking for it even before that. But
so there was a lot of legislation filed kind of quickly, and maybe in response to that report, where I would hope we could have balanced what was debated in the summer study committee with that report to, you know, be a little more intentional about our legislation. So from that vantage point, I really tried to back off this year, and I came up with a piece of legislation that kind of works on the other side.
And we will try to get at that. And by the way, when you say not mission accomplished, this is a chance to use direness as a word.
We still have direness.
We're still facing some
but
direness.
I think,
say it enough, it's going to be official.
Senate Bill 257 kind of helps with that a little bit because it's about adding temporary licenses for folks getting their BSW
during their educational process,
so that we can get more staff.
Well, of all these things that have been discussed at 5 points in his bill, what's going to make the difference? What's the most important? If you could only have one thing in those bills, what would it be? Or maybe something that's not in those bills that you want to see?
Well, I appreciate the focus on the family and children's fund and separating those two. And if we could just beef up that family and children's fund more so that we can respond to the caseworkers, respond to the vendors, I think that helps tremendously. I think that was the call that the community was saying, that, hey, we need some resources here so we can do our jobs better. I think kudos, hats off to the governor for stepping up and immediately doing something to address this situation. Like you said, we do have a long road ahead of us. But I think that if we pay attention to making sure that with this big amount of funding that we're getting ready to see, that is distributed especially on the side of the Family and Children's Fund.
And a lot of the legislation we've seen last session and this session are designed at making things easier for foster families. There are financial inducements. There are provisions that, in fact, one of Senator Zay's successful bills last year raised the number of children who could be in a single household, foster household, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Do we need to do more to make it attractive for foster parents at this point?
Yes, we do, absolutely. We had a great deal of testimony this summer from foster parents. They take on a burden that we ask of them, and we cannot give them enough credit. We need to give them all the support we can. We took a look at that. One of the biggest issues that came out in summer study was what kind of standing they had in court because they're not a party. Yeah. So we were taking a look at some sort of status that we could give them, not necessarily full standing in the court.
This is DCS said we want to reunite the child with either the biological parents or someone else.
Exactly.
And right now, the foster parents can't present information in court. They're basically silent.
Well,
or have to stay silent, at least
But what we found out, and the great thing about the summer study, we had some judges on the committee, and you know, in Indiana, I want to make this point. In Indiana, we are very fortunate that the three branches of government get along so well. There was testimony in summer study when it came to the standing issue that actually a lot of there's more rights that the foster parents have than some people knew.
Well, there's a lot of bills we can cross off the list then. We don't have to worry about that.
But there was a getting back to the three branches getting along so well, the DCS and the Supreme Court, in the note to the summer study bill, said that they will coordinate efforts to train judges and the lawyers that represent DCS specifically on foster parents' rights. Mm-hmm. So it's really great, a cooperative effort.
I mean, is the answer ultimately more foster parents or more institutional care, more inpatient residential treatment of, I mean, what's the formula look like?
All of the above. I think it's all
yes,
of the above.
I
think that we need to set a framework for DCS to work and to work appropriately and to make sure that these children are well taken care of when they're in the state's hands. But we also need to be doing some of the other things that make sure that these children have a good first step. Education. We need to make sure that these kids are in school. That they
sounds like a plug for universal pre-K. Your party, your caucus is advocating.
I think
long
that,
show though.
That's just in the beginning, and to make sure that they have all the resources they need, not only in school but then in workforce development. You know, we spend as much money on workforce development caseworkers as we were at one time here in the last decade on DCS caseworkers. So we need to make sure that. I think it's a good first step that these folks are able to remain with their caseworker for a longer period of time, but then that needs to transition into a workforce development caseworker if needed, so that they get a job and they're able to maintain a lifestyle for themselves.
Well, that, presumably that higher age cap would facilitate that. Right. Senator, as this comes over now, and of course I think the Senate has 14 bills related to DCS this year, more than the House, actually 9, but you have one that would look at enhancing the kind of collaboration, cooperation that we just alluded to.
Absolutely. I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking in the weeds, and we need to support foster families. We need to support our caseworkers. We need to be a steady hand for Dr. Stigden as she begins to get a hold of her agency and hopefully create a strong morale and a working environment. But the thing that's been particularly noteworthy of me in this, through my study of this in the last couple of years, was just simply the caseload. Our caseload has exploded the last 4 years, almost to 80%. We are on a trajectory that this single agency could bankrupt our state. And it's just, we've got to get a hold of this. We have 100,000 children in our state that are displaced, 28,000.
Which, again, is more than, what we pointed out earlier, than virtually every neighbor or maybe some of our neighbors combined.
We have 28,000 are wards of state, I believe, and another 60 to 80 that are displaced living with a parent, a grandparent, or an aunt or uncle. But anyhow, to the point of the idea that I brought forward is something called the Care Portal. And it can work throughout the state in individual communities where they can get their faith-based ministries, not-for-profits, to register with this. And it's a tool for the caseworker going into that incident, going into that intervention moment. If there's a physical need or a support need that can be facilitated with that group, it really goes out into an app where it's blasted out. They can come in with the caseworker, and of course the end intent is to keep them out of the system.
And more hands
on deck.
We're almost out of time. You may get the last word, Demetrius. How do we know when we have won? We joked about declaring mission accomplished. I've always said that this issue, you don't pass the test, you can only fail it.
Right.
So how do we know if once the state is remedied the problem?
We know we've remedied the problem when our amount of children entering into foster care drops. The amount of children exiting, they leave care, that continues to drop. When we take care of barrier busters with this portal of care thing, there are a lot of many smaller nonprofits that focus on foster youth that offer this pool of resources for them. There's this community thing, there's health, there's employment, there's all of this. if the state can have that same type of function and do that same type of thing, work with India Chiefs, which we know is going to be doing that population.
They don't each have to get a doctor. Okay. You'll put that
But
off.
Yes, when the numbers go down, that's when we have done something.
Wonderful. Important issue, as I said at the outset, and I appreciate the insight that you all brought to the table and your compassion and commitment on this issue. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Greg Sturwald of Avon, Democratic Representative Ryan Hatfield of Evansville, Republican Senator Andy Zay of Huntington, and Demetrius Hutchins, a researcher at Indiana University. Hate crimes legislation has bounced around the State House for years. The governor is for it, but some legislators really hate the idea. On the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, a division of Hanna News Service. Ed, can Indiana afford this fix?
We have to. We've seen a lot of money that's been devoted to this problem just in general, and then over the biennium, over the summer, and now the governor wants to increase this by, $286 million a year over the next
year,
2 years.
So.
Yeah, and legislators are saying, absolutely. But there's some things that we absolutely have to do. We've got to meet certain mandates, and this is one of them. We're looking at big spending in education, which we can't avoid and we'd like to increase. Then you've got things like the Medicaid budget and the Department of Correction budget, and we've got to pay for those things if we want to, keep everybody safe and keep things flowing. There are things that we just can't avoid doing.
What do you think is more important, the money or these kinds of measures that we talked about here where it's, caseloads and incentive, legal standing of foster parents? I mean, a lot of things that theoretically don't involve dollars and cents.
Well, we don't know, and we won't know until we finally see caseloads end up shrinking and kids migrating out of the system and back into a family situation. It's very hard to measure. And that's why I think that some legislators are reluctant to micromanage. They don't necessarily want to get into the minutia and are willing to defer
to the
executive.
Picked up on a flavor of that today where they don't want to dictate
specifics. Senator Zay mentioned that, but at the same time, there's also a lot of legislative concern that, over the past few years, we haven't heard about everything that's been going on. We had these different audits of the agency that the governor's offices and previous administrations did not necessarily pass along to us. We want to know about these things so that we can be part of the solution and not keep the problems going.
Very good. Ed, as always, appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
What if an app could give a voice to children silenced by autism? It can. Introducing SpeakAll. To learn more about this and more than 400 other world-changing Purdue technologies, visit otc-prf.org.